I'm Simon Ritter, the Java Technology Evangelist from Sun Microsystems, who kindly accepted our offer to come and give us a talk on JavaFX today. Before we start, I'd like to introduce him to you briefly. So Simon Ritter, the Java Technology Evangelist of Sun Microsystems, has been in the IT business since 1984, and he holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Physics from Brunel University. And originally working in the area of Unix development for AT&T Unix System Labs and the Novell, he moved to Sun in 1996. At this time, he started working with top Java technology and has spent time working both in Java technology development and consultancy. He now specializes in looking at emergency technologies, including grid computing, auto-ID, and robotics. And he has been performing with the Java-powered Lego robots for so long now, and he's very popular worldwide. And now I'd like to welcome him for his talk. Thank you.
So let me start by asking a question, which is, who here has heard of JavaFX? You people, that's fine. Okay, let me ask you another question. Who has ever tried writing a Java application which has some kind of user interface? Good, okay, so pretty much everyone. That's what JavaFX is all about. It's about making it easier to write Java applications that have some kind of user interface. And trying to really simplify this whole idea. What we really want to do with JavaFX is to take the same approach that Java has and extend it to the next level. What I mean by that is that Java is quite famous for this idea of write once, run anywhere. The idea that you can take the same application, which has been compiled into Java bytecodes, and you can run it on a Windows machine with an Intel processor. You can run it on a Solaris machine with a Spark processor. You can run it on a Linux box. You can run it on a Mac. Doesn't matter, because it's the bytecodes running the virtual machine which make it work on any platform. Now, that's fine in terms of the Java code, but what we want to do is to extend that so that you can take the idea of writing an application with a user interface and say, rather than having to recompile it to run on a mobile phone, mobile device, and recompile it to run on, say, a television, and then recompile it to run on a desktop, let's take the same code and make it run across all those different screens. So it's really the idea of a cross-screen functionality, rather than just cross-platform, it's cross-screen. So you can take an application that runs on a mobile phone, you can run exactly the same application on a desktop, and the JavaFX environment will figure out how to lay out the components, how to lay out the things in that user interface in a way that makes sense for that device. And that's one of the really key things about JavaFX, about user interfaces, making it simpler, making it work across multiple types of devices. So just have an overview of JavaFX. When we sat down and we started this whole project, one of the things that we wanted to do was answer a lot of different questions. Now, I asked you whether you'd actually written some kind of Java application that uses a user interface. Pretty much everybody here has, which is really good, because it means you're going to understand what I say when I say something like grid bag layout. Because if you try using things like that, there's grid bag layout, there's grid layout, there's flow layout, there's border layout, all of these things are very complicated in terms of programming. And so the kind of questions that we wanted to answer were, why does it take so long to write even a relatively simple user interface form type application in Java? Why is there so much coding that you as a developer have to do in order to make that work? And then the second question was, how do we make things look more attractive? Because nowadays, when you go to websites, you see all sorts of interesting animations and, you know, flash applications. They do things like they have little things that slide in, they have animations, there's lots of colors, you have transparency, you have all sorts of shading, reflections, and things like that. These are the kind of things that people expect. They don't want an interface which is just a bunch of gray boxes with buttons and forms and things like that. It needs to look more exciting. It needs to look more visually appealing. And how do we do that? How do we make it easier to do that in Java? Similarly, why is it that Flash programs, which we use a lot through web browsers and internet type applications, why is it that they look so much better than Java applications? Now, there's no real reason why they should look better, because you can do pretty much anything in Java that you want to. All of the facilities are there, but why is it that Flash applications look so much better? So these are all the questions we're trying to answer with JavaFX. Similarly, you know, why is it easier to write a web-based application using things like Ajax, using things like, you know, HTML, Cascade instances, all these types of things? Why does it seem easier to write those types of applications than it is a typical Swing or AWT application? And lastly, when it comes to coding all these things up, as you know from creating a user interface type application, every time you have a component you want to put in your user interface, you have to register some kind of handler for the events generated by that component. If it's a button, it's going to generate an action event. If it's a text field, it's going to generate a number of different events based on whether you're changing the text, whether you're inserting text. And you've got to write all the code for that. You've got to implement the interfaces for those listeners. You've then got to register that listener with the component. And then you've got to write the code which actually processes those events when it gets the events from that component. Again, all of these things add to the complexity and make it really hard in terms of the amount of code you've got to write for this. Now, why is it that, you know, with Java graphical user interfaces, what is it that we're actually approaching here? Now, the design of AWT and Swing has been based on the idea of a container and component model. If you think about it, you create some sort of container. Now, it could be a frame, it could be a panel, anything which can contain components. And then you add the components to that container using a particular layout manager. Or if you really want to, you can use another layout manager and specify the exact position of those components. But typically, you use a layout manager, you have to nest the containers so that you have your top level container, which would be maybe a border layout. Within those individual areas, you'll have maybe a grid layout. Within the grid elements of that layout, you'll have a flow layout. And again, it gets very complex. But it is a very flexible way of creating things. And it's a well understood way of creating things. It's a container component model. Now, a lot of other toolkits use the same approach. That's why I say it's a well understood approach, well understood model for this kind of thing. But what you find is the people who create the more visually appealing Flash type applications, they're not the kind of people who are just simple programmers. They're the type of people who tend to use tools like Adobe Illustrator, they use Adobe Photoshop to generate much more interesting type graphics. And then they import these graphics, they import the paths which they want these things to move over in terms of animations into an application and make it do what they want through the Flash type of idea. So what we need to do is to take the same approach with Java. How can we similarly do similar things with Java in terms of getting that kind of approach? Now, here's an example of a Java user interface. I will admit, I wrote this, and I'm very proud of it. It does exactly what it's supposed to do, which was to create just a simple interface for a game that I was working on. I needed a number of buttons to control various things, and I needed a big space where things were going to happen when we started the game. But as you can see, it doesn't look very exciting, does it? It's just a big gray area with some gray boxes, which are the buttons with black text on. That's the kind of thing we need to address. How do we make that into something more interesting? So, now the answer is that you can do this. It's actually completely within your power to do all of the same types of things that you do in Flash and other types of approaches to rich internet applications using Java. The reason that you don't do it normally is because you have to use the Java 2D APIs, which means you're going to need the APIs which allow you to control things like translucency, so you can have transparent components placed on top of your layout. You can use things like gradients for colors, so that you can have different approaches to how you actually color things. You can have all sorts of transformations. So you can scale things, you can rotate them, you can do shears, you can apply affine transformations. All of these things are possible through Java 2D. Now what we need to do is somehow combine the power of Java 2D with Swing and AWT type approach. Because Java 2D doesn't have a compositional behavior. You can't simply say, okay, here's the components I want, and lay them out on the screen. You've got to do a lot more work in terms of saying, this is the exact position that I want this component to go into, here's how I want this component to work, and so on. And what you end up doing, in the case of trying to take this approach, is you literally take a lot of the classes that you have in Swing and AWT, and you end up subclassing them, and creating a subclass which applies Java 2D effects to that standard component. There's lots of work that's been done on this, and there's a very good book called Filthy Rich Clients, which talks about how to apply all sorts of effects to Swing and AWT components to give them a much more interesting look and feel and do things like that. But again, lots and lots of work needs to be done. So JavaFX is all about creating a platform which uses Java in terms of providing the support. So much of this looks exactly as you would expect a normal Java-type application environment to be. So you have the device with its operating system, its hardware. On top of that, you've got the virtual machine, which translates the bytecodes into the appropriate system calls or machine instructions for that particular platform. Then what we're going to do is, on top of that, we're going to have a number of additional APIs which tie into this idea of JavaFX. So we'll have some core APIs, which are really the way that you handle the approach to graphics in a simplified way. We'll talk about that as we go through. We have WebKit for rendering HTML. So if you want to have web page type content, then you don't have to write your own HTML renderer. You can just use WebKit and have that displayed as part of your application. We use the idea of a scene graph for how you actually construct the layout of your components, how you want things to be shown on the screen. Again, I'll talk more about that in detail as we go through. We have some device-specific APIs, which are really looking at, okay, we want to make this cross-platform from the screen point of view, but for different devices, you're also going to want to have certain APIs which are specific to that kind of device. On a mobile phone, you want access to things like the address book. You want to be able to send SMS messages. On a television, you want to have control of things like the program guide. You want to be able to change channel. These are very different types of things to the mobile phone. Similarly, on the desktop, there'll be some quite specific APIs for like mouse or keyboard and things like that. Media is very important for these types of applications. We need to have the ability to include audio, MP3 files, WMA files, those types of things, and video, and do it in a very simple and straightforward way. So you don't want to have to write lots of complicated code. So you want to say, here's my video file, here's where I want to put it on the screen, and it just happens. And I'll talk about that more as we go through as well. Now the way it works is that you write a JavaFX program in JavaFX script. And I'm going to explain a lot about the script language that we use as we go through. And you take that and you compile it into Java classes. So from the point of view of running this application, it is exactly the same as any other Java code. Even though it's a simplified way of developing it, the way you actually make it run on somebody's machine, whether it's through a web browser, whether it's actually on a desktop or a mobile phone, is exactly the same as any Java application. So there's no difference from that point of view. And because advertising in internet-type applications, Google have proved how successful you can be with this, we need to have the ability to include advertising-type functionality into this. So there's some other things we're doing around advertising and make it simple to include that sort of thing. Now, this is really the sort of the technology stack. I won't go into this in too much detail. But as I say, at the bottom, you've got the standard Swing AWT libraries that you have in Java. You've also got the Java 2D libraries that give you these additional effects, such as translucency, transformations and so on. And then we build on top of that the idea of a scene graph, which is the construction of components that you want to make up your user interface, your actual application. And then we have the script programming language that sits on top of that, which makes use of all these underlying APIs in order to actually produce the effects that we get. So let's talk about the script. Great, thanks. First of all, it is very different to Java, and there's some really significant differences in terms of the syntax between JavaFX script and Java. You will see, as I show you some examples, exactly how much of a difference there is in terms of this. It uses what we call a declarative type of language. And that means it's not quite the same as Java in terms of being programmatic. And again, I'll explain that in more detail as we go through. But it's really about the approach that you take to how you want your components laid out, and then how the underlying system takes that information and applies it to the device that you actually want those things to be displayed on, whether it's a mobile phone, television, or a desktop. By using a declarative syntax, we make it a lot simpler from the point of view of controlling how those components are actually laid out. It is statically typed. Unlike a lot of scripting languages that you may have used, you know, if you've used things like PHP, Python, Perl, all of those types of things, they typically have dynamic typing, which means that when you assign a variable to a value to a variable, you can, at some later point, assign something completely different to that variable, and it won't complain. So you can start off with X being a string, say hello, and then later on you want to assign X a number, and so X becomes 10. The fact that a string and a number are completely different types doesn't cause a problem for certain scripting languages. Because we're using Java and Java Virtual Machine underneath, Java is a statically typed language, which means once you've assigned a type to a variable, it has to keep that type. And so if it becomes a string at the beginning, you can only assign strings to that variable in your program. Now, that's one of those things that you can have a lot of discussion around as to whether dynamic typing is better than static typing. Personally, I like static typing because that's just the way I program, just the way my mind works, but that seems to be, for me, a better way of doing things. It's also about making user interfaces much more quickly and much more simply. And as I show you examples of this, you'll see how that works. It has some very interesting and cool features, and again, I'll explain some of these as we go through, that really do simplify the whole approach to creating these types of applications. It uses the Java Virtual Machine, as I've said already, so we're just dealing with Java classes that can be deployed, whether it's as an applet, whether it's as an application, or whether it's using Java Web Start. And you can treat it just as a Java application, exactly the same way as any other piece of Java. It's just that when you create the code, you're doing it using a scripting language rather than writing it in Java. And one of the really important things about this is that you can use any Java API that is already available. In the same way that you use the Java class libraries when you're creating a Java application, within JavaFX, you can include any Java API very, very simply, just instantiate an object within your JavaFX script, and you can get access to all of those Java libraries. And that's the standard class libraries you get as part of the Java runtime environment, but also if you've already written Java code, you can include that into your user interface as well. And that can lead to some very interesting things. Declarative syntax. Like I say, this is the idea of taking an approach which simplifies how we lay things out on the screen, how we actually say where things are going to go and how they're actually displayed. Typically with Java, the way that you approach these things is more about what is going to go on, how things are going to go on the screen. So you say, I've got buttons, I've got lists, I've got text fields, text boxes, all these different types of components, or it could be an image, it could be video, or whatever. And by using the container, by using the layout manager, you're explicitly saying how you want these things to be laid out. By using a declarative syntax, we're kind of switching that from being the how things are laid out to simply what things I want to go into my interface. And we'll let the underlying system decide how to lay out the components for us. So that when you do move from a mobile phone, which has a much smaller screen, to a desktop, which has a bigger screen, the underlying system will figure out, okay, I've got more space for these components, I can lay things out in a different way. Okay, you still have the control, if you want to have the ability to say, okay, I really need this particular component to go here, or this particular component to go there. But it's all about making it easier if you want to have the same application running on a mobile phone, or a desktop, or a television, whatever. You can think of it a lot more like HTML, because in HTML, you don't think to yourself, right, this is the exact position of the screen where it's going to go. Because if you resize the web browser, obviously text, you know, resizes itself, reorganizes itself, the image reorganizes itself, and so on. So it's a lot more like that kind of approach, the HTML type of approach versus the programmatic type of approach. So, let's look at a very simple example then. This is the kind of classic sort of simple example. We use a scene graph, which is a familiar kind of approach for people who've done any kind of 3D programming. It's the idea that you have a single node, which is your root node, and then below that you have a graph of nodes which make up the various things that you want to go into that application. And by organizing those nodes as a tree hierarchy, you can then control how you want effects to be applied to a group of nodes. So if one node is a collection of other nodes, by applying, say, a transformation to rotate that node, all of the nodes underneath it will also be rotated. So it becomes very easy to do things like that. In this class here, what I'm doing is I'm defining a class, which is then called Hello World Node. And it extends a standard class that we have called Custom Node. Within that, you have a number of variables and you have a number of functions. So it's similar to Java in the sense that you have classes, you have attributes of those classes, and you have methods or functions on those classes as well. So here I've declared a variable, which is going to be some text, and then I've declared a function, which is the create function, which will return the node which is going to represent this particular object. And in this case, I'm returning a text node, which is going to have certain attributes associated with it. In this case, the X and Y position is where I want it to be on the screen. The font, I want to change the size of that font to make it bigger. And then I'm going to have some content, which I'm going to bind to some text. I'll explain more about the idea of binding it in. But that's really sort of the basic idea. If you look at that, it's very different to Java. Simple things like the fact that you use the keyword var for variables, the fact that you define the type of the variable after the actual declaration of the variable name, things like that are very different to Java. So when you start programming JavaFX, it does take a while to get used to programming this way. If you've done something like JavaScript, a lot of this does start to look very familiar. In terms of types, we've tried to simplify things to reduce the number of types that you have to deal with. And in terms of the types you have at the moment, there's really sort of five or six types that you can think of. Void is only used as a return type from a function, so if you don't want that function to return anything, you can say it's a void. If you don't declare it as being void, it'll just default to void anyway. You have the idea of a boolean, true or false, that's obvious. You have the concept of a string as a first class type. So you can define a string, you can manipulate it, and deal with it as a type in JavaFX script. We also have the idea of a duration, which is used for animations. So you can say, this is how long I want an animation to go on for, whether it's milliseconds, seconds, minutes, whatever. And then you have the idea of numbers. And rather than dealing with things like shorts, ints, longs, floats, doubles, and all of those computer science type terminology, What we do is we simply have the idea of something which is a number, which can be any kind of number, or an integer, which is clearly not a floating point number. When it comes to declaring the variables, we've all seen that you declare the type of the variable after you declare the name of the variable. So you can say here, var Fred is going to be type number. But you don't have to declare the type. You could just say var Fred. And then the first time you associate something with it, you assign a value to it, the JavaFX runtime will infer the type for you. So the first time you assign something to it, it will figure out what it is. You can also have constants, so you can do define pi as being a number. In this case, a very bad approximation of what pi really is, 22 over 7. And that will create a variable which can't be changed. So you can't then change the variable later on. You also have some access modifiers, so that you can, in the same way with Java, you can have variables that are public, private, protected. What we do here is we have the idea of a public variable, so you can expose it to other classes without having to go through an accessor method. You can have the idea of a public init type of variable, which means you can only set it in a constructor. And you can also have a public read, which clearly means that you can have access to that variable, so you can see what value it is, but you can't then change it from outside of the class you define. Sequences are very similar to arrays, but they allow you to do a lot more sophisticated things than just a simple kind of array as you would have in Java. And so here I have an example of how you can define different sequences. In this case, the first one is a set of times that we want to use for something such as an animation. So I've declared that as being four different values, 60 milliseconds, 60 seconds, 60 minutes, 60 hours, just because I've got four values in there. If you want a range of values, we've stolen some syntax from other scripting languages, so you can say here that the days of the month is simply all the numbers from 1 to 31. And rather than having to explicitly put 1, 2, 3 all the way up to 31, you simply say 1, dot, dot, 31 to represent all of those numbers. Insert and delete into and from sequences is very simple. It's much more kind of English in terms of the way that you express this rather than being like a traditional computer language. So you can say insert 5 seconds into time, which will add 5 seconds to the end of that sequence. Similarly, you can delete 31 from days, and that will delete all instances of 31 from that sequence. You can do more complicated things, so you can say, okay, I want to reverse the days, and rather than you having to iterate through that array or sequence and create a new one with the numbers in reverse, you simply say, reverse it for me, and that will do it automatically. And you can do more complex things with if statements to see whether you've got something in there. Again, it's a simpler syntax in terms of understanding what's going on. And you can do more complex things with what we call predicates to draw things out of a sequence. So here I'm saying the odd days in this particular sequence are going to be n, where n divided by, so the remainder of n divided by 2, n mod 2, is 1. Similarly, for first 3, everything less than 2 is going to be 0, 1, and 2. Mostly that's 1, isn't it? 0, 1, and, yeah, it should be 3. Okay, well, poor example, but you see what we're actually getting at there. You can actually specify a parameter which says this is what the values that I want to retrieve from that sequence are. Classes, already seen an example of how you define a class. A class has, as I said, attributes, and it has functions or methods associated with it. And in this case, what I'm defining is a class which is going to be a person. And a person obviously has attributes of a name. In this case, I also want to have an attribute which references the parent of that person and any children that that person may have. But I can make the relationship more complicated in terms of saying, okay, so a parent is going to have children. And there's a two-way relationship, because a child has a parent, and a parent has a child. And I can say that the inverse of the children is the parent. Similarly, the children, the inverse of the parent is that the child. and I can have a function which returns a number, which is the number of children that person has. Binding. Binding is all about simplifying the idea of the way we do the listener pattern. I mentioned the idea that with buttons and lists and so on, you have to create a listener for each of the events that can be created by that component. You then have to implement the methods, you then have to register that listener. Binding's all about changing that to make it much, much simpler. So what we do is we really just say, here's a value, and we want to bind our variable to that value. If that value changes, we don't want to have to do any coding. We just want to have that value change in our variable. So we go to that next slide. So what I can do here is I can say, okay, I've got variable x, and I assign the value of 10 to it. I then say that variable y is going to be bound to x plus 100, which means that whenever x changes, y is automatically going to change. I don't have to write any code to listen for that event. So if I change x to be 50, y will automatically become 150. Now, the nice thing about binding is that you're not restricted to simply binding to numbers or values. You can bind to more complex concepts. So you can bind to a conditional. So you can bind to an if statement to see if something changes by so much, then you can do something else, and you can make it more complex. You can bind to a loop so that you can recreate a sequence every time something changes in a particular way. So you can have a loop that will regenerate your sequence when something changes. And binding to a function allows you to do some quite powerful things, because if something in the function changes, the function will automatically reevaluate it and your variable changes as well. You can do a binding with inverse. So if you've got two different things which potentially could change and they affect each other, by binding with inverse, you can say, okay, if this one changes, it affects this value, but if this value changes, it also affects this one. And if you've got a situation where you have one value that's changing very rapidly, and it's bound to something which you're not using very frequently, to avoid having to continually reevaluate that value that's not being used very often, you can bind it in a lazy way, which means that only when you actually access that variable will it reevaluate what it's going to be. Here's, again, just a simple example. So what I've got here is a scene element in some code I was writing, and what I want is a circle. So I want a circle displayed on the screen. And that circle has certain attributes. This is a standard class in JavaFX. It has a radius, it has a center coordinate, the x and y coordinates. It has something that we want to fill it with in terms of color, or you know, it could be an image or whatever. And then it has parameters in terms of how you want to translate that object in terms of its x position, its y position, and even whether it's visible. So what I'm doing is I'm binding a lot of those values to different variables that I have in my application. Switch to the next slide. So then I can have an update function which takes some numbers and then does some calculations based on that, sets the local attributes within that class, and then the circle that's displayed on the screen will automatically change. So its position, its size, its whether it's visible or not, will automatically change based on these new values. And I don't have to write any code which says if, then else. It just happens automatically. So, binding to a function, as I said, this gives you a lot of power in terms of doing some quite sophisticated things. So here I've got a variable which is a scale. I then have a function which creates a point based on certain values. And then by binding my point to this function with these two values, if I then change anything which is related to that particular function, the function itself will reevaluate and return a new value which is assigned to that variable. So your point could change. An example of that, you could have something that's bound to a node which could change in terms of its shape, its color, its size, all of those different things based on what's happening in that particular function. But from the point of view of expressions, a lot of the simple expressions are very similar to those that we'll use in Java. So the while loop is exactly the same. You have the ability to do a try-catch block, pick because you're using Java underneath, so you can catch exceptions, and you can do the same thing as you did there. If statements are very similar, except that there's one little thing that changes, which is that even a single line if statement has to have braces, which is not the way you do it in Java. I don't know why they decided to do that, but they are. Similarly, we've changed some of the syntax, so that rather than using the double ampersand, which is like a type symbol to represent and or, you actually put it in English. You can have for loops, which basically iterate through a sequence, all the different values in that sequence, so you've got for I in 0 to 10. You can also put modifiers on that, so you can say for I in 0 to 10, where I mod 2 is 0, will be the even values in that sequence. And you can have a double loop by specifying two things and separated by commas. Triggers are similar to binding, but really based on significant events that you want to look at. So it's kind of like the event handling mechanism in Java, but again, done in a slightly different way, trying to make it simpler. So here you've got the idea of if a piece of text is replaced in a particular sequence or in a particular variable, then something's going to happen. So in this case, we're just printing out the old value and the new value. And the trigger will be fired whenever something changes in terms of the way you actually define that trigger. The type of nodes that you get for creating your user interface are really the sort of standard things you expect. Now, I mentioned the fact we've got the circle, you've also got the ability to have like lines, polygons, polylines, rectangles, and so on. Things like images and media are also treated as nodes, and that means that you can manipulate them in exactly the same way as a shape. So if you want to scale it, if you want to rotate it, if you want to change the translucency of a video, you can simply apply those transformations to the component which represents that piece of video, and it will happen automatically. Again, it's very, very simple, very easy to write code. Custom shapes. This is how you can create your own shapes, and you can do it in really one of two ways. If you want to do it through combining the existing shapes you've got, that's one way of doing it. And if you want to create much more complex shapes, then you can do it by creating your own path. And we put the next slide. Here's a good example of that. So what I want to do is create some sort of speech bubble. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a rectangle with curved corners, which I can do with the standard JavaFX class. I'm going to use a square, which is, again, it's a rectangle, which I've rotated by 45 degrees. I overlay those two onto each other. I use the appropriate intersection, and by changing the color, I get the speech bubble that I want. And you can see it's literally just a few lines of code in order to create that new shape. More complicated shapes, if I want something like a sort of cloud type idea, then I've got to actually define a lot more of the detail in terms of the individual arcs that make up that particular shape. So what we've got here, I've got 1, 2, 3, like 6 different arcs, and I can create a more complex shape, give it a fill color and so on. Effects, we want to be able to apply the kind of effects which give us a much more interesting user interface. So you've got all the sort of standard type things where you want to have shadows underneath the component, if you want to have some sort of blurring on it, if you want to have motion blur to give it the idea that it's moving, you can apply lighting effects to components very easily. All of those types of things that are standard effects you can simply apply to components. So here's a good example of that, taking the speech bubble. Some of this is a little bit difficult to see because of the colour. So you've got things like sepia tone, gives it that kind of brown and white effect. You can apply glow to it, you can blur it, and then you can do a reflection with a particular fraction, in this case 70% of it's reflected, and you get a nice sort of shadow underneath. Similarly, with lighting effects, take the same shape that we had before, and by applying like a distant light or a spotlight to it, you can get different effects from the point of view of sort of nice like reflections and shadows and things on that component. And you can see how easy, by using the existing component that you've got and simply applying an effect to it, then we get something that's a lot more visually appealing. animations. Animations are very important in terms of JavaFX because they allow you the ability to actually move things around on the screen and do it in a very simple and straightforward way. So if we just move on. So the idea of this is if you define a period of time you want the animation to happen over, and you define certain key frames which represent the values that you want various variables to have at certain points in that timeline. And then the system will interpolate between those values to give you a continuous variation between the values that you have. So here's an example. What I've got is a timeline, which is going to be 5 seconds long. And I've got a radius for an object which I want to actually change over a period of 5 seconds. And it's going to vary between 30 and 300. So I don't actually set up a for loop or anything like that. It simply changes from 30 to 300 over the period of 5 seconds. And then I say that the interpolator I want to use is a linear interpolator, which will just change the values in a straight line kind of way. I can also have the idea of ease in and ease out, to accelerate in, decelerate out, again, give us a slightly smoother kind of animation. Shorthand for that, I can also run the divided keyframes exactly. I can just simply say at 0 seconds, at 5 seconds, it's just a shorthand notation for that. Transitions, because quite often what we want to be able to do is to animate certain transitions of standard kinds of things, then, just show the next slide. Here's an example of that, a kind of path. So I want to have this little planet moving around this particular character. I simply define the path of that, what radius I want to use, what angle the arc is going to be, and how long I want it to happen over. And then I simply say, okay, here's my animation, 1500 milliseconds, that's the path I want to use, and it will actually do it for us. Media. I mentioned the idea of audio and video. We really wanted to simplify the whole idea of how you do this with JavaFX, so that you don't have to go through the pain of trying to figure out what codecs to use, what way to actually start the videos up, and so on. So it's really about zero configuration, just using what's already available. We want to use what's already on the platform. And so obviously on Windows, you've got Windows Media Player. On Mac, you've got QuickTime. On Linux and Solaris, you've got GStreamer. So we just want to be able to use those because they do the job for us. Why do we need to reinvent the wheel? And so if we start. In terms of actually creating a piece of video, it's very, very simple. All you have to do is you create a media object which represents the actual file that you want to play. You then have a media player, which controls start, stop, pause, resume. And then you have a media view, which is the node that you're going to add to your scene in order to display that on the screen. And since you can apply all the effects to a node that you can any other kind of node, then you get the ability to rotate it, you get the ability to crop it, you can do all those types of things. You also have the idea of a timer, so that if you've got a video playing and you want to put things like speech bubbles into that video, you can pick certain points in time and you can simply have a speech bubble pop up and have text or whatever you want in there through a thing called a media timer. So here's just a simple example. Create a media object, which is my movie. Create a player and say autoplay is true, so it will start playing straight away. Then with the view, what I want to do is use the media player. And then I want to say that whenever somebody clicks the mouse in that object, in that node, I either pause or resume the video. So I can start and stop the video simply by clicking the mouse when we're in there. And finally, I'm going to rotate it by 90 degrees. For developing code, the easiest way we've created who uses Netflix? Who uses Eclipse? Okay. Well, NetBeans obviously a product from Sun, so we've decided that NetBeans is our sort of primary platform. So you can now create JavaFX projects, you can have autocode completion, you've got various different things you can do in terms of making it easier to do this kind of thing. For more information, JavaFX.com is the best place to go. That is really a very good example of, you know, lots of example code. You can download the JavaFX SDK from there and lots of different things there. OpenJFX.org is an open source implementation of JavaFX compiler. We haven't made all of JavaFX open source yet. The compiler is open source. There's other things we're working on at the moment, and there's some other places we can go to for more information. So I just want to very quickly show you a demonstration of So what I'm going to show you is an example of an application that I actually wrote myself. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to just find an example of something which would allow me to learn about all the different features of JavaFX. And so I created this thing which was based on an application I saw, which was a book which somebody had done in Flash. And so what I can do is, this is just the this is just some of the code here. I won't go into it in detail, but you can see that it has the usual sort of look and feel. If I run this application, what we'll get is, starts up, and then we get, So this is my book, and that's the front cover of the book. And the idea is that what I can do is I can actually open the book and have it animate the movement. So if I let go of the book, the idea is it'll just, the cover will just drop back onto the book. Yes. And then if I move it over and drop it on the other side, the cover opens. And then because we now, that's a hardback book, so that the pages inside are obviously paper pages. So if I pick up the corner of one of these pages, we actually peel the page back and move it over to the other side. And the pages themselves are just a node in a scene graph, which means that anything that you can put into a JavaFX application, you can put on a page. So I just put a very simple animation on here, just to show you that you have an animation on the page. Similarly, if I just turn over to the next page, I put a swing form in here. So I can just type in my name, I can put my age, and I can submit the data. So, okay, I'm lying about my age. Similarly, again, because it's just components on the page, what I can do is I can actually have a video running on the page. And so I can just have a little video clip that's running there and have that as part of my page. And similarly, if I want to just have an image on the page as well, I can. And then I can close the book and drop the cover onto the side. So that was really just an example of what you can do with JavaFX. Most of what took the time in terms of doing the application was trigonometry. It was figuring out all the angles of where the things needed to be rotated, which bits needed to be clipped, and things like that. The actual coding itself was really quite straightforward, but most of the effort was actually in figuring out all the mathematics of how to actually get the page manipulation and so on to work. So hopefully that's giving you an idea of JavaFX. Thank you very much.
First question, I'm very interested on this code. Is it possible you hand it to Masuda and she...
I will certainly do that. I'll send you all the code for the book example, and then you can have a look at it and you can see how it works. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. The next question then. So you presented a new language or additional to Java, which we know.
Right.
What is now JavaFX? And why do we need JavaFX, or shall we completely forget Java?
Oh, no. They do not want to completely forget Java. JavaFX is all about creating the user interface. Java is about doing the processing underneath. So you can do lots of other examples of creating applications. So, for example, if you wanted to access things like Amazon, books, things, if you wanted music type things, you would do that in Java to access the web services and the things from Amazon or iTunes or whatever. And then you'd write the user interface part in JavaFX. The JavaFX is all about just the display of the information.
Then how JavaFX can can combine.
Because JavaFX, as I say, what it does is you compile the JavaFX script into a Java class file. So it runs in exactly the same way as a Java application. And you can combine it with Java in exactly the same way. You've just got a class file that references other classes in the same way that you do for the normal Java application. So JavaFX script is all about just simplifying how you create the user interface.
Okay, that means from JavaFX class, I can access to Java class.
Absolutely, yes. So an example which I didn't bring with me, but I've done another demonstration which uses the remote control from the Nintendo Wii, and I'm using Bluetooth to access that, and all that's written in Java, and that's feeding the information which I'm binding to on the screen. So as I move the Wii remote control around, it actually controls the application on the screen. So the complex side of the processing is done in Java, and then I simply provide a set of variables to the application JavaFX, which I'm then binding to the display.
Bob, nobody's asking the question. Maybe my last question.
Okay.
What was the need of changing the syntax? You showed many elements of Java in different ways.
I can't really answer that one because I wasn't the person that created it. It really came from a project that somebody did literally in his spare time. And he created this thing called form follows function because he wanted to simplify the idea of user interfaces. And so he came up with the syntax, like I say, based on things like JavaScript. If you look at some of the trigger type stuff, you'll find there's a lot of SQL type syntax in there as well. And he's stolen ideas from other scripting languages. So it's really kind of almost a mashup of languages to create this. But I can't explain why we decided to have a significantly different syntax.
So is this built into the application
as
a jar file?
Yes. So with the application, when you create the application, you can say, I want to create it as a jar file, in which case you can run this application. Or you can say,
you have the same thing.
And what it relies on is in Firefox 3, there's a change in the way the plugin copies by the browser itself. So that the applet is actually running in a separate address space outside of the browser. Still has the same security model. So you're not bypassing the sandbox security model that you get from that. But it enables us to then be able to drag it out of the browser. So it's still running in its own address space. Close the browser, which then disappears. You still have that application applet running.
Is the language development documented anywhere online? Just because the binding aspect is really cool, and it's a great example of like design language for function.
Yes, I can actually say now that if you go to javaeffects.com, and as part of the download with the SDK now, you do get a language specification. That was something we didn't have to start off with, which was from my background, I found that really weird. Yes, we do now have a more formal specification. It's not quite BNF, but it's kind of similar to that. So it does give you a formal specification of the language. Yeah.
I also have one question.
Okay. Yep.
The most popular debate recently on JavaFX is, as you also mentioned, when is it going to become open source and available? I'm asking this question actually on behalf of the users.
Right.
I'm not sure if they're here at the moment because they have to maintain a stall for the refresher spread. Do we have any dates for this?
No. At the moment, the only thing that we've open sourced is, as I said, the compiler. In terms of the rest of it, there's a lot of, we do have a lot of issues around the use of some of the media things. So the MP3, the video playback, actually relies on code which we don't have the rights to. So we can't simply just say, okay, we're just going to open source everything. We have to make sure we can open source the code that we have. So there's a lot of legal stuff that needs to be gone through to make sure that